Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. It is November 11th, Veterans Day, and we have braved the ice storm outside to be here in the radio studio once again. It's been a while since I've been here in the studio at the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma. Obviously, we had a break for the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day, and a confluence of circumstances conspired to prevent me from recording a number of new episodes that would have played throughout that break. And then after the feast was over, my father and brother and I flew up to Buffalo, New York, where my father is from. And we would have also had recorded episodes for that. So it has been a while. Last week I was supposed to be on the air, but got food poisoning. So I was out on Monday, and then my voice was still out last Friday. So it's been a long time. I've been very excited to come back in here, and finally it's happening. It was really a wonderful feast break, and the last episode of this show actually played on October 14th, which was the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. We interviewed Jason Kokomais. He is working in the festival department. He works really hard year-round to make sure that all of us are able to rejoice in God's church at feast sites around the world. And particularly, he works with the ones in America, but also with the regional offices for the feast sites around the world too. So that was a really fun interview, and hopefully we can get some more interviews on here pretty soon. For the feast, my parents-in-law from South Africa flew over here to Edmond, and then we drove up as our family and them together in one vehicle all the way through Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota, then over through Minnesota, and finally to Wisconsin, where we celebrated the feast. And then on the way home, we went back down through Illinois, Missouri, and Arkansas, and then back over into Oklahoma. So my in-laws got the grand experience of traveling through 10 different states while they were here for the feast. And that was a lot of fun. It was actually the first time I've gotten to choose for myself where I was going for the feast. I've always been either with my parents or my grandparents on my father's side, or with Mr. Fleury, traveling with him. But this year, my sister Paris volunteered to take my place traveling with our grandfather, Mr. Fleury. And so that gave me the freedom to go on that grand road trip like we did. It was a lot of fun. And then after the feast in Buffalo, we finally got to make the pilgrimage up there and explore a little bit. And apparently, it's often ranked as one of the top 10 underrated cities in the entire United States. I didn't have the highest of expectations for the city itself, just because people often make fun of Buffalo. And yet, it's absolutely beautiful up there. A lot to do and a lot to see. They have a naval park there by the water of Lake Erie. And you can see a lot of old ships and other armaments there, and just the downtown area is pretty nice as well. But anyway, we're back. I'm feeling a lot better after food poisoning came out of nowhere and got me last week. I have even hardly been off campus, so it was hard to even figure out where the food poisoning came from. It wasn't like I've been going to a bunch of restaurants. I'm just really glad it's over, that's for sure. Well, today we're going to talk about Herbert W. Armstrong and his childhood, mainly. We have for free at thetrumpet.com his autobiography. You can read that right there. You can also request it for free. It's a really, really thick book, around 1,000 pages, and you can get that for free, and you can learn all about it, all about his life and how to be a minister. That's what that book is mainly about. It just shows how God worked with him for 90 plus years, all the way from childhood, like we're going to talk about today, through to the end of his life and just perform miracles all along the way because Mr. Armstrong simply submitted to God. And God did have to work with him to make sure that he submitted at first before finally Mr. Armstrong willingly chose to submit after that for the rest of his life. It's incredible just going through this introduction and the first chapter of the autobiography, just how much involvement God had in his life when he was really young. And at first, Mr. Armstrong was actually unsure if he should write an autobiography, but then he realized how much value there could be in it. He said here in the introduction, "For some time I felt I should not write the autobiography," he's saying. And then he says, "I felt it was my responsibility to get on with getting the job done, not to talk or write about myself. But when listeners, viewers, and readers ask to know what's back of this work, how it started, what led to it, how it has been done, I came to realize they have a right to know. As a young man, I read Benjamin Franklin's autobiography 3 times over a period of a few years. It had a considerable impact and influence on my life. I owe much to having read it. The reading of life experiences of many other men, whether biography or autobiography, have been of great value and inspiration." So Mr. Armstrong learned, even from a young age, when he was reading Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, how valuable a catalog of life experiences and lessons from leading men and women can be. And now Mr. Armstrong presided over God's work throughout the 20th century. And during that time, the work would double in size every 2 2/3 years for decades. This is something that is completely unprecedented in any business field. You will not find an operation that grows that rapidly like Mr. Armstrong's work did. And so you do have to wonder, what exactly was it about God's man, about Mr. Armstrong, that made all of this miraculous growth possible? So we're going to dig into this, like I said, today, just starting with the childhood, but we're also going to go through the entire autobiography over time. We'll, of course, have interjections for other interviews and other topical subjects, things that are timely to discuss. But the autobiography really does have so much valuable information for us, and it is important to cover. Mr. Armstrong really covers his entire childhood in just a few pages, really. He doesn't spend a whole lot of time writing about it. Of course, by the time he wrote his autobiography, he was probably already up there in his old age. It's hard to remember too many events from when you're young that long ago. But he did have quite a few entertaining stories that stand out to him, stories we can learn a whole lot from. It was at age 5 that Mr. Armstrong swore off chewing tobacco. He actually tried it because there were some men digging ditches in front of his house. And one man put some tobacco into his mouth, and he told Mr. Armstrong, young Herbert, "This is something good. Here, sonny, bite off a chaw." Mr. Armstrong took him up on that, and then he even swallowed it. Obviously, you're not supposed to swallow tobacco. He should have asked a question about it, should have maybe taken some time to consider exactly what he was getting himself into. But here, Mr. Armstrong learned the hard way. And he swore off chewing tobacco for life. Never had it again after the age of 5 when he swallowed it. Didn't just chew it, he swallowed it too. And it's funny because just a paragraph or so later in this first chapter, it's talking about how Mr. Armstrong is constantly asking questions as a boy. Young Herbert Armstrong just asking questions over and over again. So he goes from not asking a question about tobacco, accidentally swallowing it, probably just experiencing intense pain and burning from that, to then asking questions all the time. This is what it says here in the autobiography, right there at the beginning. "I was constantly pestering him with questions," speaking of his father. He says, I always seem to want to know why or how. I wanted to understand. At age 5, I can remember my father saying, that youngin is always asking so many questions. He's sure to be a Philadelphia lawyer when he grows up. So he started asking a lot of questions. He had that childlike wonder about the world around him. There was a recent episode of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show discussing childlike wonder, and we'll put that in the show notes when this show becomes a podcast. But this is something that we often lose as we get older. Maybe we don't ask as many questions. Maybe we don't even care to be curious about the world around us. There is definitely a balance there. It's not necessarily too important to be curious about all the details of the people's lives, the people we interact with every day. We don't need to know everything and turn conversations with other people into interrogations where we're constantly asking about them. But in terms of wondering about the world, wondering about creation, wondering about different aspects of society and how they work, it is interesting. It is good to be curious and to always be trying to learn new things. For example, we have a lot of great radio shows on this station, KPCG, about various subjects. One is Just the Best Literature, all about reading the very best books, learning all we can, being curious enough to read entire books about important subjects. What about Music for Life? Even if we are not necessarily experts when it comes to music, we can learn enough about music itself and about the different kinds of music and about the different types of musicians to really appreciate music, high quality music, when we listen to it. And it does take curiosity. It does take just wondering about these subjects so that we can get the most out of these types of programs. Obviously, if it were not important to be curious and to learn as much as we can, we wouldn't even have a lot of the content that is made available in this church. I mean, you think about all of the different things that we can access, all of the information we can access on multiple church websites, and all of the literature on the radio, through television, and it really is just an endless array of content. There are so many different uplifting realms of information. There are a lot of good things to learn about. There are some things we should avoid entirely, of course. But most things are relatively good to learn more about, even if we don't necessarily make it our expertise in life. It's interesting here how his own father, Herbert W. Armstrong's own father, said that Herbert would become a Philadelphia lawyer when he grows up. Now think about that. He did become a Philadelphia lawyer. He did become the one man God used in the sixth era of the church, which was called the Philadelphia era. God used him to do miraculous things, meeting with hundreds of world leaders, traveling the world, giving as a way of life, and inspiring millions of people. And he was a master in God's law. So you could say he was the Philadelphia era lawyer. He knew all about the law, how the law is a law of give and love. And it really is about holding others in the highest consideration, God first, and then other members in the church, and then the world, and really just treating them as good or better than ourselves. Mr. Armstrong really did master the law. He did become a Philadelphia lawyer when he grew up. But look at how it started. It started from a blooming curiosity when he was just a few years old. And Mr. Armstrong even acknowledges that. He says, that obsession for understanding was to have great influence on founding the Plain Truth magazine and Ambassador College in later years. If he hadn't been curious, if he hadn't always been asking questions, how could God have really used him in the way that he did? I know in my own personal life, a lot of the time, some of my biggest problems arise from just not asking enough questions, especially if it's something to do with communication with family members and friends, or maybe regarding a work assignment. sometimes it's really important to ask a question, even if you're thinking about it that way, with that regard. Asking questions in daily life can be a really important thing to help us avoid trouble sometimes. So it's not just always about being curious. It's about making sure that we're communicating the way we need to. We're being crystal clear so that everything in our lives can operate as efficiently as possible. There's obviously a balance. There was a time where young Herbert was sent on a pigeon milk hunt. He was asking so many questions all around town that all of the men working at their jobs would just send the young boy throughout the town to look for pigeon milk. Pigeon milk is not a thing. If you didn't know that, I don't think pigeon milk is something that is commonly for sale. You're not going to find it if you ask for it. And so that's what they had to do to kind of get rid of him. Because sometimes you can go over the top. You can ask too many questions. You can ask dumb questions, questions that you could answer for yourself if you just thought about it for a minute. So there's definitely a balance there where you don't want it to become too annoying either. Mr. Armstrong, even when he was really young, saw how common it is for people to engage in groupthink, in having a hive mentality. He saw there was a Seventh-day Adventist operation nearby where he lived growing up in Iowa. And even back then, he thought how strange, how odd these Seventh-day Adventists must be because they kept Saturday for their Sunday. He says here, even at that age, anything different from common custom and general social acceptance automatically seemed strange. And if strange, then of course it seemed wrong. Why do people assume that the rank and file of people can't be wrong? And that's something that this entire church talks about all the time. Just because millions or billions of people believe a certain way doesn't automatically make them right. You can be in the vast majority of people and still be wrong. And this happens all the time. There's many different examples of that in society, in religion. It really does require proving what we think instead of just going along with everyone around us. I remember when I was younger, they used to have Christmas parties and Halloween parties at the public school I attended when I was probably just, 6 or 7 years old. And usually I would get permission to just go to the library so I wouldn't have to be involved in the class parties at those times. And so one young girl in my class noticed that I was always conspicuously absent from those parties. And she was personally offended by the fact that I didn't keep Christmas. And she confronted me on this. Just imagine two little seven-year-olds and one of them being angry at the other for not keeping Christmas. And obviously, that type of mentality came from the people she grew up around, probably her parents, probably others in her family, her friends, because it was so common and customary throughout her life to keep Christmas, she obviously thought it was the right thing to do. Of course, a seven-year-old hasn't taken the time to prove for a fact whether Christmas should be observed. She just went along with that because that's what everyone around her had done. And thankfully, in my great wisdom at just 7 years old, somehow I avoided getting into an argument about it. Here in the autobiography again, this is still in chapter one, which is titled Boyhood. And again, you can get this book, the entire massive, fact-filled, enthralling autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong for free at thetrumpet.com. And you can request your own physical copy too. Mr. Armstrong writes here in this chapter one titled Boyhood. The point is, we blindly assume that the majority of people can't be wrong. But I was to learn in later years that people as a whole can be wrong. So terribly wrong that people are now bringing the end of their wrongly built civilization crashing down on their own heads. That's a great point, isn't it? Are we not on the edge of nuclear disaster, World War III? If the majority of people on the planet were right, in the way that they lived their daily lives and what they believed, would we really be worried about the survival of the human race? Of course not. So that right there is overwhelming proof that the majority of people can and usually are wrong. Mr. Armstrong also talks in this chapter about his extensive physical activity when he was younger. He liked to ride bikes. He liked to ice skate. He liked to participate in track and field. He could run a 5-minute mile. He packed his life with a lot of really good health practices, even when he was younger. Just very physically active. And of course, when he got older and he was the physical head of the church, he was writing about the 7 laws of radiant health. This came from a lifetime of experience. And Mr. Armstrong was able to offer some simple tips that really can revolutionize our health. He didn't turn to human medicine, a dependence on pill prescriptions like so many do now. He knew that a lot of health just came down to fresh air, getting outside in the sunlight, moving around, stretching, even just drying off vigorously after a bath or a shower. He knew about proper diet, mainly having alkaline in your meals instead of acid. So having a lot of fruits and vegetables, especially. These are just simple things that he proved for himself through a lot of experience, through a lot of research. And it's so much more helpful than what medical practices in the world can tell us. And he was years ahead of his time. A lot of the stuff that he talked about health-wise is just now being confirmed in the medical industry. And finally, Mr. Armstrong closes off this chapter talking about his spark of ambition. He had an awakening. Mr. Armstrong worked a lot of jobs between the ages of 12 and 16. He worked a lot of different jobs, all kinds of valuable experiences through work. And when he was 16 years old, one of these jobs involved bussing tables. He was waiting on tables in a dining room of a resort hotel in Iowa. And the owner there complimented his work highly. The owner took time out of his busy schedule to tell young Herbert, teenage Herbert, that he could see qualities in him that were destined to carry him to success. The owner expressed great confidence in Mr. Armstrong and what he would be able to accomplish as long as Mr. Armstrong put in the effort. And it is just astounding to think at the impact this had on Mr. Armstrong's life. Just one adult taking the time to offer sincere praise and to give advice, constructive advice, about what direction to go in life. I think that's really helpful for all of us adults to think about in our interactions with young people. Oftentimes just a smile, just letting them know we care about what's going on with them, can really encourage them to keep going in the right direction. Mr. Armstrong even called this his life's turning point. So like I said, Mr. Armstrong grew up with a lot of curiosity, a lot of energy. He had sort of an idea of different jobs that he might want to pursue when he got older, but it wasn't really nailed down yet. He wasn't totally sure of his life's goal at this point when he was just a teenager. And really, which teenager is totally sure of that anyway? But he did understand, especially after this experience, the value of ambition. This hotel owner actually aroused ambition in him. It wasn't like he was lazy before, but now, at this point, he had a spark. He had a desire to climb the ladder of success, to become an important somebody, as he writes in the autobiography. Mr. Armstrong said it was an ambition for accomplishment, for self-improvement. And he also stimulated the will to put forth whatever effort it would require to achieve this success. He made me realize I would have to study, acquire knowledge and know-how, and be industrious and exercise self-denial. What an incredible moment in Mr. Armstrong's life when he was just 16 years old because of one adult who took the time to express confidence in him and to give him a little bit of loving direction. This sudden arousal of ambition really probably could be credited with what Mr. Armstrong later became. And of course, God had to work in depth with him for a long time, even as he was in his 20s and 30s, to help him too. But Mr. Armstrong, from this point forward, was pretty much on fire for the rest of his life. His life was changed by this one interaction. If you look at what the work does today with young people, you will see that we are always trying to ignite that spark of ambition in the young people. We have Imperial Academy, a K-12 school where they can learn and they can be around teachers who in many cases have just gone through that entire program themselves a matter of several years before and are already right there in front of them teaching them. So these young people at IA can see, well, this could be me in 5 or 10 years. I could be a teacher here. They went through it. Maybe I could too. They get to go to Philadelphia Youth Camp every summer. And that's 3 weeks of just a packed schedule. They learn exactly how much is possible in one day. They don't even have the chance to think about getting in trouble at camp because the schedule is packed with uplifting, edifying, character building, and just absolutely fun activities. And they realize how much is possible at this point. And they transform over the course of those 3 weeks. I can't even tell you how many young people I've seen go to camp, and it's almost like they're so scared, they look sleepy-eyed at the beginning. And then at the end, they're the ones who are more fired up than anybody, talking more than anyone, and they're the ones trying to get their dorm mates to be the same way. And in future years, they become the leaders of those dorms, and they help all the new campers go through that experience the right way too. But they really are sparked at PYC. They have a chance to go to Armstrong College too. They, right after camp is over, once they're old enough and out of high school, they can go out on their own for 2 or 4 years and go through this intensive program. And this program really does try to spark them. If they haven't been sparked with ambition already, probably by the time they're done with college, they have been sparked. But this entire program, you just see it from 5 years on to graduating from college, they can be sparked. And a lot of this, as you know, is modeled after what Mr. Armstrong started in the Worldwide Church of God. He knew the value of the young people. He said it was the most important group for him to reach, for the work to reach. So today we've just gone through the first chapter of Mr. Armstrong's autobiography, which is titled Boyhood. And we'll continue getting into this more and more in later episodes. And of course, like I said, that will be interspersed with interviews and other subjects too. So thank you very much for listening. It has been a long break, but it's also been great to get back in here. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.